End of every WGTD midday newscast, we feature a song by a local artist. So why not join us for Noon Tunes, Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m. here on WGTD HD.
Important stories you've probably never heard. The story of Joshua Glover, an enslaved person who escaped through his own perseverance and the help of Abolition Ground Railroad. Here to talk about the project, the movement, and the story of Joshua Glover is Pauline G. Mitchell, Underground Railroad Project Director for the Professional Women's Network for Service. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
I'm approaching 30 years old myself. My master's thesis is looking at generational racial trauma. I'm Black. I've been in this community. And I've never heard of this story, right, until recently. So first, could you explain the story of Joshua Glover and your reaction when you first heard it?
Well, since I've been a member of Professional Women's Network for Service, we started this research a long time ago, and Dr. Walter T. McDonald, they worked on this project for several years, scouring the different sites that they could talk with people or read about it, do research, all the way up to Canada. So that was a story that was so interesting that they wrote a book about it, and it's called Finding Freedom, The Untold Story of Joshua Glover, Runaway Slave. And that particular book was published by the Wisconsin Historical Society in 2007. But during the process of our study about him, we learned that Joshua Glover was an interesting figure because in 1850, the same year that the Fugitive Slave Act was enacted, Joshua was on the auction block in St. Louis, Missouri, as a person who was going to be put into servitude. But he was a person that did not like that. He never really resigned himself to the life of a slave. So he escaped and found his way to Racine, Wisconsin in 52, which was 2 years after his being sold into slavery. So once he got to Racine, he settled in Racine and did several jobs in the area. And one of his main thing was to go down on the middle of Racine downtown area, which was called Haymarket Square. And he would sell his wares there to make money and to live a life of as much freedom as possible. So he was kind of like under the radar from his slave master for 2 years. And when they discovered that he was in Racine, they came to Racine to capture him. And that eruption took place. So where would you like for me to go next?
So, that's just incredible. The eruption took place. What does that mean?
That means once they discovered where he was and they came to his cabin one night when he was relaxing with some of his friends, took him away and took him up to Milwaukee because they wanted to put him in jail. But the Racine jail was considered too flimsy for them. So they took him to Milwaukee by boat and put him into the Milwaukee jail. But when the citizens of Racine heard about it, there was a lot of commotion about it. So at Haymarket Square, which is now called Monument Square, they had about 100 men who assembled there and they did their speeches and all of that and decided that they wanted to free him. So what they did was banded together and went to Milwaukee by horseback, boat, or whatever way they could get there as fast as possible and to demand that he be released from jail. Of course, they would not release him. So what they did, they took what was called a battering ram, which is a log, and they busted him out of jail. So once they did that, the news flew all the way through Racine. There were ministers who spoke on it. There were abolitionists who spoke on it. The newspaper editor spoke about it and published about it. And the news just flew all over Southeast Wisconsin. So in the process of getting him freed from jail, they had to figure out. So they were a step ahead of the slave catchers all the while. So they took him around many sites in southeast Wisconsin, hiding him with those abolitionists who would provide places for him to stay until they could figure out how to get him away from here. But in the process, that information just flew all over the state, and it was a big issue because there was a group of people who did not agree with slaves, and they did not want to abide by the Fugitive Slave Act, which said that they were to cooperate with the slave catchers if they were had any knowledge about an escaped slave or him who were imprisoned, and a lot of mean things were done to them because they stood up for freeing of a slave. So the interesting thing about this whole case is it went to the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decided, no, we are not going to enforce the Fugitive Slave Act, which they considered unconstitutional. Now, that was a brave act because that was fighting against the federal government, but they did it anyway. But there were people who suffered as a result of it. But the important thing about this, Wisconsin stood up against it. And so in the process, after a lot of uproars among vote that during that time, the Republican Party was formed in Ripon, Wisconsin, and they were at that time against slavery. So that also led to something that I guess interested Abraham Lincoln. He was elected as the president of the Union short after that. And so you know the story about Abraham. And the interesting thing about this, a lot of that all led from the story of Joshua Glover. And so we are proud of it here in Racine because a lot of people, as you say, don't know about it. That is a case that should be understood, read about, taught about, and so forth, because it led to freeing of the slaves.
That is just unbelievable. Every to change the course of history in our community, these residents who put their own lives in their hands to go and do the just thing, to do the right thing. So I want to ask you about this process. You mentioned that it started in 1991. How did you keep the motivation to keep pressing for this recognition for Glover from the city perspective? What were some of the roadblocks that you faced as you tried to bring this story to the fore, to the light?
Well, I have to say that the group of women who did this, they're a very strong group of people, and they just won't take no for an answer, is the point. So what we had to do in the beginning was to get this done. We started with installing a monument about Joshua Glover, and it's now standing at Monument Square in Racine because we wanted a physical representation of what had happened in Racine, all sparked by one man. And so one good way to do that is to have a big, nice monument. We call it an artistic representation because, you know, it's carved and it's got the plaque on it and the story written in like paragraph form. You can't do much in a paragraph, but at least it's there so anybody walking by it can read it. And in the process, in order to get that happen, one of the roadblocks we had to go through was how we would get the city to grant us the ability to install that monument. So we went to the city council and we spoke with the mayor, and we just kept going on and on and on, and we impressed them enough that they granted us the right to put that monument there. Then we had to figure out how we were going to pay for it. So we did that with a small grant and our own money. So that's how we got that monument, the first monument. So once we did the monument at Monument Square, then we wanted to make sure that any other site in Racine that had an affiliation with the Joshua Glover story could be brought to light. So in the process, we worked with the Racine Historical Museum. And What we did was use that as our place to house the archives that we had collected. And we did displays, and it's there now. You can go down and see it and do a little tour of it. So we have a display there that tells the story of Joshua Glover and what happened to him here in Racine. So that was not so hard to do because the museum was on it in the beginning. So I joined the city into it. That made three collaborators: the Professional Women's Network for Service, the Historical Museum, and then the City of Racine. Then we discovered that the First Presbyterian Church here in town was also a site that was very friendly to abolitionists. And they had one of their policies: no person could be a member of that church who had ever owned slaves. Now, that would not be known by most people, but it was. And so we discovered that they probably hid some slaves in their basement because we found a few hot artifacts. So in all of our collecting, we hooked up with the National Network for Freedom. That's a national organization headquartered in Cincinnati. And so they recognized us. So that monument is an official site. It has a star on it, what indicates it is officially recognized as one of the sites in the United States. At that time, there were only two. We were one of them that had a story that was so, I guess you want to say, influential as the Joshua Glover story. So it was not difficult. It was just long and arduous, which means that it took time. So we had speeches, we had dramatizations, we had presentations, we did tours at the historic community, little parties where we recognized people and so forth, all to highlight the story of Joshua Glover. And in so doing, we hooked up with the Racine Unified School District, which allowed us to have students come in on field trips and so forth to read about and to see the artifacts that we have displayed there. So the Historical Museum is considered a facility that is recognized by the National Network for Freedom. Our monument is considered a site. Ceremony a few weeks ago, there are 10 of those sites, and we have 8, 9 of them marked right now. But there's one other monument that we install that is down on near Lake Michigan. It's on Gaslight Point Circle. And you should see it too, because in 2007, we installed that monument. And that's the monument that is as close to the lake as we could get to signify that Joshua Glover left on a steamer from that point on his way to Canada. So that is a monument that's there. So we have two a granite one and then a stone one, two of them there. And then a couple years later, we did a commemorative walkway around it, wherein we did bricks where people and organizations and churches and so forth could buy a brick with the inscription that they wanted on it. The whole purpose of it is to put something down so that all of us can see it, visitors can see it, citizens can see it, and do a ceremonial walk around it to symbolize what the slaves went through when they were on the Underground Railroad. They were walking until they could get on a boat to get to Canada from Racine, those that left from Racine. So, and a couple years later, we installed some more bricks. So now we're going to do the finishing touches on it, hopefully by the middle of June, where when we complete the memorial walkway by people buying bricks and in honor of their parent, in honor of their grandparent, in honor of whomever they want to, for anybody who sees this anytime in the future, because we don't think it will ever be moved. It's too significant for Racine for them to take it up. So anyone who goes there can see that we have people who were sensitive to the cause of the freeing of slaves. And they did so by doing a memorial brick around this walkway.
That is just incredible. Absolutely incredible, the journey. And you touched on something just there that I want to almost go back to, because these people that was, right. I mean, people complain mm-hmm. today about a 20-minute drive, right? You know, so I mean, this was a journey to go through this. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about, you said that Glover, Joshua.
But we don't know a lot about his trip to Racine, but we know he was going north because the Underground Railroad, I know people wonder why it's called Underground Railroad, is because it was done like openly. It wasn't done openly. It was as secretive as it could be. But it's the amazing thing about it, sympathetic to the cause, helped. And so that's how these slaves were able to evade the dogs and the horses and everything else that the slave catchers were riding on in order to find them. So what they did, they followed the North Star, and I know you've heard about that. And it's amazing that they could do that, considering they were not allowed to read. So they had to do everything by word of mouth and passing it down the history from one to the other. And so when they decided to go, they just took off and went. And so they walked by night, you know, through the woods. And, you know, the environment is not always that nice to people in the wintertime, not even in the summertime, because there's snakes, there's other animals, whatever it is, but they learn how to do it. And also what they also learn how to do is when they were walking following the stars, if it got to the point where they knew that there were people tracking them, they knew how to get in the water. So therefore then the dogs couldn't pick up the scent. So they still figured a way how to get from place to place. But you also should note that the quilts that you've heard about with the patchwork quilts and all of those that they had during those time, some of those quilts had secret codes in them that the slaves learn about. And they could read what that meant. And they could know if that was a friendly sight and all that kind of stuff. So they really did. They were intelligent people. And the thing that's so strong will of people of African descent to free themselves from slavery by following these trails and depending on people who were of goodwill. And a lot of them were also people of faith. And they were diverse. So there weren't a lot of Black folks because Black folks didn't have anything. They were the ones fleeing. So one thing about it, the African people, and we call them of African descent because they weren't really called African-American at that time. We call African-American now. We've had all these different names, Black, colored, Negro, nigger, and all of that. But we knew that we were of worth. And when we could get the opportunity to do something, even though during that time, there was a lot of risk, they could starve, they could be captured, they could be jailed, they could be beaten, mangled, sold back into slavery.
You are listening to Generation Now. I'm Troy McDonald. I have the honor and privilege of being joined by Pauline G. Mitchell, the Underground Railroad Project Director for the Professional Women's Network for Service. Pauline, I want to talk about what this meant for you personally, being a Black woman, spending the last 30 years, my lifetime of your life, working on this. What is the significance? What does this mean for you to see this come to fruition from all the monuments, the bricks, the dedication, having the mayor of Racine recognize this? It must feel like a lifetime's worth of work being honored and recognized. What does that feel like for you?
Well, I'm just now beginning to really think of it that way, because while you're doing the work, you're not thinking of recognition. You're just trying to get the story told in a meaningful way, because I'm an educator, because, you know, educators want to make sure that they do things right. They want to make sure that they are as accurate as possible in whatever they present. But the fact is, it's to me, it's important that our history be told, because it has meaning. And I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, there was no information taught to me in the official setting about what went on with the slaves. Now, it didn't mean that the teachers didn't teach it. They did, but they didn't do it by using the official curriculum. So here we were trying to make sure that we would leave something that could be interwoven in the curriculum if it was recognized by the Racine Unified School District. And it was. So that was an important thing, even though it might not be taught except in February. But to me, it doesn't mean just February. It's year round. You live it daily. And so my whole point about this is to continue to do as much as possible so the legacy of our people can be realized by the future, by the present generation as well as the future. So that's the main thing I think of, making sure that our people, as well as all people, know that people of African descent have abilities. They can do wonders if given the chance. The fact that slaves took it upon themselves, as you say, to walk at night, in the rain, in the snow, sometimes without shoes, and all of that, to make it better for themselves and their future generations, I don't see why we would stop short of doing the same thing right now. And so if we can do it by telling a story, enacting it, have some permanence in this city, in this state, in the nation, and even globally, we have significance that if nobody else will tell the story, we tell the story ourselves. That's the best way to tell it, because nobody else can tell it like we can, because we have lived it. And if our parents told us anything, sometimes you hear the stories from the older generation and you dismiss it. And I want our young people not to dismiss the fact that there is contributed in this city, in this state, in the nation, and all over the world. So that's my mission right now.
Pauline, I have one.
He would be humbled that we recognize what he did as being important. Now, from the little bit that I do know about his earlier life, it's kind of sketchy because you don't get, you know, who his parents were and what they went through and all that kind of stuff. But meaning, he made a meaning out of his name that is forever there. So I would think he would be
so much from today. I know I personally have learned so much today, not just about Mr. Glover, but about you, your passion, your determination, the entire group, the work that you laid, and the lesson, I think another lesson to take away is to be patient, to work diligently, that it doesn't happen overnight in an instant generation of which I am a part of, where everything happens instantly, that you have to lay the bricks, right? You have to lay the foundation, and that takes time. And thank you and your group for doing that work so that myself and other young and people younger than myself know our history, know our value, and know our worth. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And I'd like to say to you that we are still fighting for freedom. And we see instances of that in our national scene all the time. But we have to know that everybody wants freedom. And without freedom, there can be no peace. It can't be peace for the oppressor nor the oppressed. So the word freedom is an important word that comes out of this whole setting. Thank you so much.
Pauline G. Mitchell is the Underground Railroad Project Director for Progressive.